Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, September 2nd. I'm Aaron Schella-Levine in this afternoon for Ray Graff. Are you in the market for a new home or do you plan on selling property? We'll have two real estate professionals in the studio today to answer your questions. Alex Monticello of Monticello Real Estate and Renata Lewis of Keller Williams Capital District are waiting for your questions. So give us a call at 1-800-348-2551. Again, that's all of your real estate questions at 1-800-348-2551. You can, of course, email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Renata, Alex, and your calls all coming up on Vox Pop after the news. Hello again, and welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Aaron Schella-Levine. We talk, oh boy, real estate today on Vox Pop, and we welcome back Alex Monticello of Monticello Real Estate. He specializes in residential sales for buyers and sellers in the Capital Region, and of course, Renata Lewis from Keller Williams Capital District, and also leads the Renata V. Lewis team. She's a go-to source for real estate industry insight and advice. Give us a call at 1-800-348-2551. That number is 1-800-348-2551. You can email us your questions, all things real estate, at voxpop@wamc.org. Alex Renata, welcome back to Vox Pop. Thanks so much for coming on down. I know it was quite the journey to get into the studio today.
Good
Thanks
to be
here.
Us.
Yeah, Alex ran.
I did run.
Out of breath when you got
Hopefully
here.
You That's can't tell like I'm out of breath.
Yes.
I am fortunately years away from my own journey of trying to buy a house. I am comfortable in the renter space as a mid-20s-year-old. But for the folks, as I am sure you work with every single day, who are actively right now looking to purchase a house, what is going on in the housing market? I listen to Marketplace. I do my financial stuff. I try to keep my ear to the ground. A lot of it goes over my head. Right now, for you guys, what is the daily, the biggest concern, biggest sort of shakeup factor that you guys are looking at right now?
Well, it's kind of a broken record, yeah. Actually. And unfortunately, it's a lot of the same. Mm-hmm. You know, I was just looking at the recent data, and we've had 36 consecutive months of price increases, mm-hmm. and we're at, you know, relatively historically low inventory. The latest month supply of inventory is like, I think, 2.5 months in the Capital Region. The latest median sale price for the Capital Region rose to, I think, $370,000. That's over 6% from the same month a year ago.
Right.
So we've got an inventory problem, and this is all in the face of rising mortgage rates. So it's getting less affordable, certainly for new home buyers, and it's getting more competitive.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the one thing I will add to that is, yes, inventory is low, and, you know, again, very similar to what we've been seeing over many months. I guess the difference that we're starting to feel is that buyers are taking a little bit longer to make decisions. Buyers aren't necessarily jumping at something as quickly. They're being very calculated about, you know, how much they're spending because the interest rates have increased. You know, their PITI ratios are higher. So they may be budgeting a little differently. So we're not seeing, even if we're seeing multiple offers, mm-hmm. and it depends on areas. There are still areas that are extremely competitive, but we're seeing 2 to 3 to 4 offers versus the 10 offers. And maybe that list price to sales price ratio isn't as crazy mm-hmm. in many cases like we've seen over the last 3-4 years. You know, but buyers are still out there. They want to stay competitive. I encourage them to, you know, really get way deep into underwriting and to the commitment to stay competitive. But we are looking at their numbers very closely.
So we're seeing a lot of caution is what
Correct.
It sounds like. There's hesitancy to make that leap, which to me feels like it makes sense. It's a yeah. big purchase. What kind of conversations do you guys have with folks right now about, you know, that cost benefit of making that leap versus, you know, maybe you do want to wait. I mean, or is now the time to be moving? What does that, I mean, I know that's, I assume that's a lot of what you guys do is just making it all make sense for folks like me who have zero clue.
I mean, you know, unfortunately, I think if you look at the last 3 years, right, mm-hmm. if you've waited, it's only costed you more. It's only cost you more money, even in the face of rising mortgage rates. And I think even if you assume mortgage rates are going to rise over the coming 3 to 6 months, and that's possible based on where the 10-year Treasury is going, the one thing that I also like to share is that in the face of inflation, those that own assets have greater appreciation. Mm-hmm. So that kind of skews to supporting home buyership, even if you feel that you know, mortgage rates may come down or maybe prices may come down. I think the reality is in our market, the Capital Region, it's unlikely that prices will actually decline year over year. You know, you may get, and you always get monthly price declines from 1 month to the next, depending on the season.
Sure.
But if you're looking from a 12-month perspective, month over month, you know, we've had many months of consecutive price increases, and that's, I'm not sure that's going to change, in part because of the inventory crunch.
Sure.
Right? Even though, as Renata is saying, buyers are getting more cautious, we still have more buyers than we do sellers. And that's represented in the tight inventory, the month supply of inventory at 2.5 months.
Right. So even though the inventory seems to be low, does that correlate to, I mean, it sounds like if folks aren't buying homes as quickly as we might want them to be, that means people aren't selling their homes as quickly as I assume they would want to be. Are you finding folks are stuck sort of in that limbo of they've listed the house and, oh no, you know, it's not moving anywhere. They've got to drop their asking price.
We're not there yet. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, when going back, I would say maybe a year or two.
Sure.
You know, something would go on the market. You'd have, you know, a lot of showings, very quick interest, mm-hmm. and, you know, extremely quick decisions. Whereas now things are maybe a little bit longer on days on the market, but nothing compared to the average. Mm-hmm. You know, we're still seeing homes sell between 4 to 7 days, which is unusual. You know, average days on the market, what, 30 to 60 days, going back to a balanced market. You know, what... And again, it just comes down to, you know, if you're a buyer, how much liquid money do you have to, you know, to budget for the closing costs, right? So someone like you who's renting, mm-hmm. you know, I find we're ready to move into a home when maybe purchasing the home is going to cost you a little less.
Sure.
If you have the money to get into it, you know, mm-hmm. as far as the closing costs, the down payment,
right,
XYZ.
Right.
So, again, where are you in your life? What's that lifestyle look like? You know, are you going to stay here for quite some time? Mm-hmm. But like Alex said, it, you know, every day is a good day to buy a house because no matter what's happening with the market, the organic appreciation of homes is anywhere between, you know, 2 to 3% yearly, right? We've seen considerably more than that over the last 6 years. Most homeowners are sitting at like 46% equity right now, which, yeah, so even if you're downsizing and even if you have to buy the house, you know, lateral to what you're selling the house for, what does that lifestyle look like? Does it make sense? And you're still carrying that asset into, you know, whatever new home that you're getting into.
So I am down in Albany today. I operate and my home base is out of sort of the Saratoga Springs-ish area, which its housing market is its own, I am sure, unique beast. And we can, if nobody else calls, we can get into it later. 1-800-348-2551. But talk to me about, you know, doing this job in this part of the world for so long. What sort of unique quirks are there to the Capital Region housing market? Do you find that there are sort of these characteristics to it that sort of differentiate it when you get on the phone with folks in your line of work from other parts of the country?
You know, I think what I've noticed over the last, you know, several years is this has just become a more attractive place for people to move. You know, the big breakthrough, I mean, you can actually go back to this trend, I think, started on a very smaller level after 2001. There was an exodus out of New York City.
Sure.
And that went up the thruway, 81. And there was a migration out of the city, and many of the counties in southern New York benefited. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, this was only accelerated post-COVID. Mm-hmm. And I think now as work has changed and the idea of remote work is more available to more employees, you know, we're seeing probably about a third of the buyers who are purchasing the Capital Region are coming from outside the area. And that's been consistent now for 6 years. Mm.
Yeah, I think that we're shielded in this area between all of the colleges, the SUNYs, the state capital, you know, a lot of big box coming to the area. We have Amazon. So all of that has provided steady employment. It's provided somewhat of a balanced, you know, just ease of living, I guess. I mean, listen, every city, every town has its hardships and, you know, people's lives change and work changes. But overall, you know, even when the market was very soft, you know, nationally, mm-hmm. we didn't feel it as much. So, you know, the market will always shift in different areas, but we're not New York City, we're not LA, we're not, you know, the bigger taxes or Denver. I feel like because of our communities and, you know, the strong position that a lot of the jobs have retained in the area, I think that we do attract, you know, the people that come to the area. I mean, we moved here because of September 11th. So we left Long Island. So we were part of that first trend that came here. So it was just, you know, better living, a little bit more affordable, you know, great school districts, and we were looking for more of a, you know, sidewalk community.
Very good.
Yeah.
1-800-348-2551. We're talking real estate on Vox Pop today. That's 1-800-348-2551. Give us a call with your real estate questions. You can email us your questions at voxpop@wamc.org. We're going to hit a break, and then we'll get to your calls and your emails, and we will keep the discussion rolling. We'll be right back. It's just after 2:20 here on Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. Today's subject, it's real estate. We've got Alex Monticello and Renata Lewis, both real estate experts, as we have already established so far in the hour. We want to hear your questions. Give us a call, 1-800-348-2551. That number again, 1-800-348-2551. Give us a ring with your real estate questions. You can email us those questions instead at voxpop@wamc.org. If you're a bit phone shy, we won't judge you. I've got a question. This is just from me. We've been talking about the trends. We've been talking about what you guys are seeing. Sort of on the other end of that spectrum, what are people coming to you guys with in sort of the sense of misconceptions? You know, what are things that people are afraid of that aren't happening in the Capital Region that you guys have to either very quickly dissuade or maybe takes a little bit of time to say, hey, that's not, you don't have to worry about that?
Well, you know, everybody's guessing, right? I think sure. when you talk about predicting the future.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty bullish on the Capital Region mm-hmm. in general in terms of the housing market because of the lack of supply and what we're seeing in strong demand mm-hmm. both inside of the Capital Region and from outside the Capital Region. And so when people come to me and say they think there's going to be a bubble or this is like the next housing crisis, these prices can't be sustained, I think it's actually a valid critique and it's important sure. to be heard. You know, when you then look at the supply demand dynamics and you look at the quality of the buyer that's purchasing the house today, which is nothing like it was in the great financial crisis. What I'm seeing is that the buyers who are buying today have very strong financial positions. And a lot of cases, they're paying a lot for the house, but they're putting a lot of money down. So they've already got a lot of equity in there. And again, the month supply of inventory is very low, meaning that the rate at which the homes are selling is very high compared to the total available inventory. So when you look at those two metrics, for me, it feels like this is very different than, the great financial crisis.
Which, of course, I'm sure people are still, obviously, that's top of mind.
But it's good to always be thinking about, worst case scenarios.
Yeah,
I do agree. And I mean, I think another concern that, I hear a lot is somebody that's ready to downsize, get out of their big home. They want something smaller. And, they're pausing because they're looking at what's on the market for a smaller square footage home. And it's not making sense for them financially to move, or they don't think it makes sense for them to financially make that move. And it really isn't about, comparing square footage to square footage. Again, it's you have a lot of equity in your home. Why are we wanting to downsize?
Sure.
Is it that one-story home? Is it the house is just too big? Maybe lower taxes. So let's look at the big picture together. And again, it's you're moving one asset equity to another. If it's about the lifestyle and the well-being for your next chapter, it does make sense.
Being, again, on the ground reporting on all of the things that are happening in this part of the world, one of those things is real estate and the construction of affordable units and non-affordable units and all the developments that are going up probably way too close to the bars on Caroline Street. That will be very fun to report on once those are up and running. If you could shake your local politician and say, build more housing, is that what you'd be sort of yelling in their face to do, or is that maybe not the solution here?
Well, I think that we have a supply problem.
Yeah.
Right. And
how would you address that? I guess is
there
a better
is not
question.
Enough inventory.
Yeah.
And I think unfortunately there's a lot of issues that are in tension. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So if you think about open space, right, and conservation of land versus affordable housing units, and there are stories of for example, farmers who are looking to sell a large farm to build housing units. But sometimes those don't get approved by zoning boards or communities. So, I think we've been in a structural deficit with regards to housing units for probably over a decade, and it's not getting better. I do think that, supply, figuring out how to incentivize more supply of inventory is critical to bringing down these housing prices. I'll also say over the last several years, we have seen kind of a lot of different boogeymen raised for the reasons for housing prices.
Yeah.
Everybody from the Federal Reserve and Chairman Powell to real estate agents themselves with regards to commissions. That was a big, under the prior administration, that was a big effort, right? If we can decouple the commissions and through this antitrust suit, we can bring down housing prices.
Mm-hmm.
All those things have played out. We've had a different Fed chair. We've had a large global settlement with regards to commissions. But home prices continue to rise even in the face of rising interest rates.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is it's a supply issue.
Yeah.
And
sure.
So until we attack the supply problem, I don't unfortunately think we're going to be able to really fully address what this problem is.
No, I agree. The population is growing. People are moving to different areas and we need housing. And, it is a sore subject, like Alex had said. And, people want more homes and more affordable homes, but then they stop, the zoning and I get it. Listen, every community wants some space and they want the green space and the parks and preserve what's out there. But at the same time, I don't know if we go bigger and instead of wider, just, airspace. But then we're talking city life. We're talking, changing communities and the landscape. So, we definitely are in a industry right now where we're hearing it over and over again, and there hasn't been a great solution.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember exactly what the statistics are, but we are like 10 years behind new construction right now.
Whoa.
Where we should be.
Right.
So, and I don't know the exact number, but we just had
it's
a big
that,
meeting.
Yeah.
And so that just tells you that, yeah, with everything that's happening, on top of that, new construction has stalled tremendously.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's for various reasons.
There are boxes to be checked.
Yes, exactly.
Well, we are going to go to Sam in Red Hook. Sam, you're on.
Hello.
Hello, Sam.
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. My question is, I am the executor of my aunt's will. She has a co-op apartment that we're trying to sell, and I've been interviewing brokers. And you guys just said this is not the city when you were talking amongst yourselves a few minutes ago. Mm-hmm. This actually is in the city. I don't know if that's relevant. But talking to these brokers, they're suggesting that we offer to pay the buyer's broker fee, that might incentivize getting buyers through the door to view the apartment. That's quite a sum. It goes up to 3%. And I'm curious what your guys' philosophy is on that.
So you absolutely have the right to pay them if you choose to. I usually consult my sellers depending on the situation. Keep it open. Keep an open mind to it. Get it on the market. You know, if you go out there and you say, hey, we're not paying any fees, that could deter some of the buyers or the agents from being able to show it, because the buyer simply may not have the extra liquid money to pay their realtor. You know, keep it open. See what kind of offers come to the table. That is now a one term that is included in the rest of the terms that's fully negotiable. So just like your price, just like your timeline to close, hey, we're looking at the offer. We like X, Y, and Z. Hey, can you work with us on this aspect? You know, maybe a smaller fee. So, you know, maybe don't commit to a certain number, but I would suggest keeping open to it because, hey, you don't know. Listen, if an agent's bringing you an amazing offer, you know, work with them and help the buyer, you know, compensate them the best way that they can, whether it's they're going to roll it into their mortgage, roll it into the price. It all works out evenly. If a concession has to be put in place to help pay them, that's going to be off your net as well. So instead of just looking at the commission and look at the bottom net of what that's going to look like after all your expenses, and then negotiate based on that would be what I would suggest.
Okay, I appreciate that, because that was not the way it was presented. It was like you decide at the get-go if you want to advertise a number or you're not going to advertise anything. So I didn't realize we could leave it open-ended like that. So I appreciate
it. It could be a little different there. And there is an advertising aspect. There are agents even in our local market that say, hey, we're offering, you know, 2%, 3%, whatever it is. And it does help with the marketing status of, you know, if I'm sending a flyer, if I'm sending a postcard. Different MLSs probably have a little different rules on what type of marketing they're able to put the commissions on. But as far as keeping it off the MLS, we no longer can advertise on the MLS, hey, we are, you know, offering X, Y, and Z.
Gotcha. Okay. Thank you very much.
Well, you're
Sam,
welcome.
Thanks
good
so
luck
much for giving us a ring. We got another question sort of in this same vein while we're thinking about it from Robert, who asks, what is the current Capital District practice regarding whether or not the seller needs to offer to pay the buyer's commission as well as the seller's?
Well, the listing agent, as the listing agent, I won't, if I can't get compensated, I can't work for free, right? So whenever I meet with a seller, I tell the seller, you know, what my commission is. So we need to get paid, which is contingent on the house selling. Mm-hmm. But as far as the buyer agent commission goes, I agree with Renata in the sense that, you know, the seller has the option, three options, right? They can advertise a specific commission amount to a buyer's agent if they want to. Mm-hmm. They can stipulate that they won't pay any buyer agent commission no matter what, or they can leave it open-ended and say that there's no predetermined buyer agent commission.
Sure.
It's open for negotiation. And so I always encourage, like Renata, my clients to keep it open-ended. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of times the winning offers do require or do request a buyer agent commission, mm-hmm. But not always. Again, it comes down to what's the net number that the seller is going to walk away with after paying commissions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it comes down to setting the right expectations, right? If you're
sure.
my seller, we're going to talk about, hey, you know, in this area, they're likely that when an offer comes to the table, there will be a buyer compensation mm-hmm. that's going to be included in there. And then there's a checkbox that say, hey, we want the seller to pay for it, right? Don't freak out when you see it. It's again, it's a term that we can negotiate, we can discuss, but it's likely that it's going to come up. So let's talk about it now. Let's prepare for that. you know, here's the maximum amount, you know, what's the max amount that you're willing to pay, you know, or whatever that case may be. Mm-hmm. But it is split now. The listing fee, hey, this is how much I'm going to get paid. And then the buyer agent fee, you know, do you want to put a hard number on it? Do you want to keep it negotiable? You could absolutely say no. But mind you, if you say absolutely no, and that's what we're advertising, it's going to limit some of the buyer pool.
Sure.
Not because they don't want to see your house. Mm-hmm. They just may not be able to, you know, pay that fee on their own.
So you can open the door,
yeah,
and see sort of where, yeah, sweeten the pot, yeah, or at least offer to. Ross from Schenectady asks, lifetime renter here with hopes and dreams of owning a house someday. Wondering the best way to start the process, bank or realtor first. Also wondering if you have any insight if my partner and I should wait until we're married before starting the process together. So that's a two-parter. Mm.
So I would suggest talking to an agent first. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, sit down with somebody that has a really great buyer's consult. It's not something that you're going to be signing on the dotted line and you need to commit to anything. But hey, here's the whole process. They're going to talk to you about then talking to a lender, going through the pre-approval process. You know, I encourage a lot of my buyers to get into the commitment phase of it. This way we're stronger buyers when we're putting offers in together. Mm-hmm. And really just discussing what are their financing looks like. You know, when is your rental expiring? You know, how quickly can we do this? Or do we need to wait so we're not doing mortgage and rent at the same time? So, you know, a lot of these questions get unpacked and answered during a buyer's consult. And then we kind of sort of leave them with, hey, here's the next steps, you know, go out and do X, Y, Z. And depending on the timeline, we'll get a little bit more clarity of what needs to happen next.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just say on the married or not married piece, sure, you certainly don't need to be married to buy real estate. You can still purchase the real estate together, regardless of your marital status. What that's really going to come into play is probably your income and debt, and whether adding your partner to the mortgage will increase your purchasing power or not. But that comes down to a debt to income ratio that, you know, talking with an experienced loan officer, they can run through those scenarios and tell you what's needed.
We just went over ideal first steps. What are opposite, the worst things that you could be doing if you are just starting out looking to buy a house?
You know, even I tell everybody, even the experienced second time home buyer or third time home buyer is get the financial piece.
Yes.
Don't
look at home
first.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So, I mean,
yeah,
you know, it
make sure you got
it's
it.
Really important.
Yeah.
Even if you know you're 100% good, because sometimes people forget the amount of closing costs and cash required. You know, other times there can be issues on their credit report that they didn't know existed. Now that's is coming down with some of these self-monitoring services like Credit Karma, but mm-hmm, but you know, sometimes there's just issues on the credit report that are helpful to uncover now. But yeah, really, I think important to get pre-qualified as a starting point.
I was just going to add, and a lot of times you're going to get pre-approved or pre-qualified for a number, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of times that number is much higher than you're comfortable with, because the banks want to lend you as much money as they can, right? Mm-hmm. So then we kind of slice it down. Hey, what does that mortgage payment looks like? What does it look like? And a lot of times it's a lot higher than they anticipated. So, hey, let's take a step. Let's take a step back. Okay, so where are you comfortable with that mortgage payment? So even though you're pre-qualified to say $400,000, maybe we're really more comfortable in that $350,000 zone, right? Mm-hmm. So really breaking it down and figuring out where your comfort level is. What you know, what are those monthly expenses going to look like?
Sure.
This way we're not house poor, or we get so excited about a house, right? We put an offer in on it, or we're close to putting an offer in, then we call the lender, and then the lender gives you this crazy number, and now we're disappointed. Mm-hmm. So let's do all of that beforehand. This way we're ready and we're eliminating some of those surprises.
We're going to take one more question over the email, then we'll get to a couple of more calls after a break. From Mary, who titles subject, navigating the sell first versus buy first decision. We'd love your advice on the best approach to selling our current home while looking for our next one. We can make a down payment without selling first, but ideally we'd sell first so we can put significantly more down and have a more comfortable mortgage. Would you recommend taking the chance in listing our home first? Our hesitation is the limited inventory in our desired area and price range. We're nervous about selling without knowing the right house will come along, Is there another strategy you'd recommend?
You know, that's a great question. It comes up a lot. If you have the ability to make the purchase before your current home sells, it's usually easier, especially if you know that your home will go quickly. A lot of times the biggest barrier is that initial down payment. But if you have the minimum down payment to qualify for the mortgage on the house that you want to buy, a lot of times some of the local banks will do a mortgage recast. So you can, let's say if you've got the 10% or 5% down plus closing costs to purchase your new home, go ahead and purchase your new home. And then when your current home sells, usually within a few months, you can take that big lump sum, apply it to your current mortgage, and it's called a mortgage recast, where they'll basically, you'll have the same interest rate, same term, but they'll reduce the balance and therefore reduce your monthly payment. So you can they can accomplish that same goal with a mortgage recast without selling their current home first.
We're going to head out to a quick and short break. We see your calls. We will get to them. 1-800-348-2551. Give us a ring with your real estate questions. We've got Renata Lewis and Alex Monticello here. 1-800-348-2551. VoxPop at WAMC.org. The time is 2:41, a little bit after. It's Vox Pop, WAMC's live call-in talk show. I'm Aaron Schella-Levine. We're talking real estate today with Renata Lewis and Alex Monticello. We're going to hop right into the call. Rich, you've been waiting so patiently. Rich, you're on.
Yeah, so I own some residential duplexes, and I've had some stable tenants. But I look at rents. Like, rents seem to be out of sight now on rental, like two-bedroom apartments. Where's the market on rentals? They just keep increasing as far as the rental rates?
Yeah, I mean, from what I've noticed, I don't do a lot of rentals. But yeah, they definitely have been on the rise. I would say as much as home prices as far as the percentages. And again, I think there was a shortage of rentals. I think that's being, we were starting to see like more of that, like Malta, like you were saying, they built a ton of new apartments.
Right.
So depending what area you're in and depending on, how many available units there are, you'll see that those rentals have gone up as well. And I just think it's just the course of what's been happening in the industry overall. But I don't know what else to say about that, Alex.
Yeah, no, there's the rental market, like the residential resale market, is constrained by supply, number of units. And I agree, it's astronomical. It's kind of hard to believe what some of these rent payments are. They're more than a mortgage was, 8 or 9 years ago. My thought is until the supply picks up, it probably won't level out.
Okay.
Yeah.
Rich.
My rents now for my tenants are low compared to what I see. Mm-hmm. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Rich, thanks so much for giving us a call. And we'll talk, we'll keep in the renter headspace. Up in Saratoga Springs, it is a very summer visitor-heavy, we'll call it economy. Short-term rentals are a thing that I've been reporting on since day one of taking this gig up there. When it comes to people, arriving on scene to buy a house to turn it into a thing that is only rented for, 4 months out of the year, what does that do to the relationship that you're building with folks who are selling versus buying? I mean, how is that impacting what you guys do daily, if it does at all?
I don't do a lot of short-term rentals.
Sure.
Even sales. So Saratoga definitely has a huge niche, right?
Mm-hmm.
So most of the people that are going in there are in that, it's that pretext.
Mm-hmm.
They want to, resell. They want to rent it. They understand that the income is going to be coming in during that short time period.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then, you know, with the college there, and they could still maybe through the winter, you know, get parents to come in and stay for a few weeks, whatnot. Right. But yeah, I mean, overall, I call Saratoga Springs like a little Manhattan. You know, it doesn't really make sense. Like, you know, hey, let's buy a duplex for $1 million. You know, I think it's more of a, I own in Saratoga, and you know, I can make some money during the track season. Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. It's beautiful. It's wonderful. But it's not necessarily, I think the return on investment is more so holding on to property for a little bit of a longer period of time and then reselling it. I mean, some of the, you know, Union Street, like, you know, all those huge, beautiful, traditional, old style Victorians are just...
It's an investment.
Yeah, it's a huge investment. Yes, yes. Not something that you're going to get rich on overnight, for sure.
Sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Nothing to say.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think I will add, I will add, though, that, you know, I think there are some people that Airbnb properties across the capital region, right? And not just in Saratoga, but I've seen it in Albany and other municipalities. In part, what they are, they're renting to also kind of traveling workers, right? There's some websites where traveling nurses, for example, are coming in for 3 or 6 month stints.
Sure.
And so they are paying, even outside of, you know, the summer track rental market, they are paying very high premiums to rent for 3 to 6 months, in part because they're getting paid and compensated very high per diem rates by the hospital to come in because the hospital's at a supply shortage of nurses or doctors. So, yeah, but I think, you know, a lot of it I keep coming back to at the end of the day, supply. You know, we just don't have enough supply to offset this demand. And this demand, and we're getting hit from a lot of different directions when it comes to demand.
Yeah, I mean, this Johnny asks, this is sort of tying it together. Mm-hmm. You may have just answered the question already. Johnny asks, why are the closing costs on real estate so high right now? I look on Zillow and they list the proposed closing costs on my $335,000 home as close to $30,000. That's ridiculous. 3 exclamation points.
So, I mean, a couple things. One is, I'm not sure how Zillow is coming up with their calculations. You may have to look at the fine print. You know, the biggest cost when it comes to selling your home, the biggest expense to the seller is real estate commissions. Mm-hmm. So the best way to cut that out, if that's your primary concern, is to go for sale by owner. Right, you can list it on Zillow by owner, or you can list it on a lot of other websites by owner. And I'm the first when I meet with a seller to tell them if their main concern is to pay the least amount of commission possible, that's the best way to do it.
Sure.
But you know, if you think that there is somebody that could add value, and that ultimately could, you know, market the property correctly and increase the value that's worthy of those commissions, and then you can obviously interview a couple real estate agents. But that's the best way if they're concerned with bringing down their closing costs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, on the buy side, most of the closing costs are the down payment on their mortgage.
Sure.
So it's technically your money, and it's the equity that you're, you know, pumping into your first purchase or your second purchase, whatever that may be. Mm-hmm. But the more money that you put down on that purchase, the lower your monthly mortgage payments will be. You know, and depending on the bank that you're using, you know, 20% down eliminates some PMI. We do have programs at 10.5% that eliminate the PMI, the mortgage insurance. So you know, when you slice it down, it's a big number, but it also includes taxes, like prorated taxes, if somebody wants to include the taxes into their mortgage. So, you know, that sum looks big, but essentially it's a lot of the money that is going to go into your equity and into escrow that when you sell, you get to pull out.
we've been talking a lot about sort of the one end of the spectrum when inventory is tight, where we're, you know, sellers market. What about from a buyer's perspective, other than just throwing as much money onto the offer as possible? What are some things that, that people who are looking to buy in our current market that, that can sort of help their offer stand out?
Well, the good news is, you know, as we're coming in towards the end of the year, I like to tell my buyers that November 15th to December 31st, there's like the best 6 weeks of the year to buy a house. You know, it's holidays time. If houses are still on the market, that's when sellers will get really desperate. If they're listing between Thanksgiving and the end of the year, they also probably are pretty excited that somebody's going to show up and buy. There's a lot less buyers in the market, obviously, in the dead of winter. Throw on a heavy snowstorm. Man, that's a great weekend to go out with your agent and pick
frozen
up a house.
And make a good offer.
And you know, maybe you get it for list or a little bit less. Another technique that I'll use is, you know, you can search for houses by days on market. And what we are seeing, although houses are selling quickly, there's something that happens where if if it was just not marketed correctly, or maybe they overpriced it, or maybe they listed it just the wrong weekend of the year, if it begins to linger on the market for more than 10 or 14 days, some of those houses just wrongfully get stigmatized. And so now if the house has been on the market for 3 weeks or longer, sometimes you can actually, you know, go to those houses. There's no active competition. Sellers are getting a little nervous or antsy, even in this market in the middle of summer. And you might actually be able to pick up that house without engaging in multiple offers. So you can kind of filter out those houses.
Agreed. And when it comes, you know, interest rates is always a big conversation. You know, wow, you know, it's, we remember when it was 2.5%, 3%. I tell everybody, just forget that ever happened. Unless we get another pandemic, we will never see those kind of numbers for a 30-year mortgage. So statistically, like 5.5 to like 6% is the average interest rate. So yes, we're a little bit higher than that. But if you go back 50 years since we've been tracking it, I believe the average interest rate was like 8.2%. I mean, my parents bought in the 80s, I think 12.6% was their mortgage interest rate. So forget the interest rates. As long as it makes sense, let's really break it down to what does your monthly mortgage payment look like? You could always refinance. I tell my buyers, marry the house, date the mortgage, right? You could always refinance. And, you know, very few people stay in their home for 30 years, right? You know, what's the plan? If you're planning to buy a new home in 5 to 7 years, or you're going to be relocating, it's a temporary situation. Get in there, you know, live your life with your family, whatever that case may be, you know, or continue to rent, right? You're building equity. It's an investment. You know, however way we can get you in there, if you're ready to buy, we'll get it done.
You know, on that, that's a really good point, Renata. I think, especially now, given where rates are and where they probably will go over the next 3 months, I'm talking a lot about, in our office, we're talking a lot about adjustable rate mortgages. Adjustable rate mortgages have a bad name and a bad reputation, and, you know, buyers need to be fully aware of what that means. But right now, with a lot of local banks, you can get an adjustable rate loan, which is fixed for 5 years. And that interest rate is about a whole percentage point below where the 30-year fixed is. And so if you believe that mortgage rates will be lower over the next 5 years than where they are today, that's a strong argument to look or use a lender that might have an adjustable rate loan. So the adjustable rate loans right now for 5 year terms are about 5.625%, where the 30-year is around 6.75%. So if I was buying a house today, I would look at that 5 year adjustable rate and just be aware that within 5 years, you either move, sell the house, but more likely you do a refinance.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I mean, I did a little research before I got here. So the Mortgage Bankers Association, their current expectation is for the new year is the mortgage rates to remain around 6.5%. So, I mean, if that's the case, we're not going anywhere. So if we're ready to buy a house, let's stop fixating on that interest rate. Let's fixate on how much it's going to cost you to get in there, and let's just get it done.
It's fair. We've got another question from Brielle. Brielle in Saratoga asks, how does buying down mortgage rate points work at closing. Alternatively, mortgage rates are too dang high. What can I do? So a two-parter there.
You know, you can buy, you can buy down the mortgage rate, but, you know, I'm not sure I would encourage you to do that. And you just got to run the numbers. The better solution might just be simply to get an adjustable rate loan and then refinance. You know, the one reason why I wouldn't recommend buying down the rate is if you're not going to hold on to that loan for, you know, several years, then you're paying upfront costs for a mortgage rate that you're not going to fully realize because you're not holding on to the mortgage for the life of the loan. Oftentimes there's a payback period and they can run those scenarios. Is it 2 years? Is it 4 years based on the upfront cost and your savings to reduce the mortgage rate?
Agreed. I usually say to anybody, if you're going to buy down the points, make sure that you're in the house at least 5 to 7 years. Anything before that, if you calculate the numbers, it just doesn't make sense. You're not really saving any money.
Mm-hmm. I think another thing, just off the top of my head, is when folks around-ish my age are buying a house, it seems to be for longer periods of time. It's that starter home. You want to do a lot of projects to fix X, Y, or Z up. If you could have a priority list of things that you're getting into a home, you've got the time, the energy, and some of the money to start fixing things up, what would that 1, 2, 3 priority list be for you guys? Those DIY projects at that new home.
You know, I guess it's going to depend on how handy somebody is,
sure, right?
Because some of the DIYs that we see, like, we kind of shake our head and we ask why. Painting is an easy one. You know, replacing some hardware, replacing some light fixtures, maybe, you know, getting rid of that carpet and getting some, you know, hardwood floors in there or some of the easy snap-on flooring that they have out there right now. You know, obviously, like the roof, the HVAC systems, electrical, you need somebody to go in there that's a professional.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, windows, you know, I mean, a lot of these things are energy efficient for the house, like when it comes to like a window or a roof or, you know, new appliances, something that you could use as a write-off, you know, when you do your taxes as well. So it really depends on how handy you are, how much money and what the budget looks like. And you know, are we looking for that, you know, home that is something that we want to renovate and get at a much lower value in order for you to put in some, you know, sweat and equity into it and make it your own?
Mm-hmm.
I would find, you know, what I'm seeing out there is someone your age right now, they don't want to do it. They don't have the time to do it. They don't have the money to do it with the prices of the homes.
Yeah.
And they want that turnkey, right? Mm-hmm. So our biggest conversation with our sellers is, you know, let's get this to the most turnkey property that we can, because those are the ones that are selling at top prices right now, mm-hmm. to this day.
Yeah, I think, you know, as a first-time home buyer, you'll have a better chance competing on houses that have more dated kitchens and bathrooms. But I often, if you can look beyond kind of the vintage or the age of those features, and think more about the quality, right?
Mm-hmm.
Has this home been cared for?
Sure.
Have the important updates been done, like HVAC system, roof, windows? And did the homeowner properly care for the property? Because if they have taken care of a lot of the mechanical pieces, you know, updating some of those finishes over time could be a smart way to do it. And you're not paying a premium when you're, you know, bidding, you know, in a bidding war for a home that has a shiny kitchen.
Well, Renata Lewis and Alex Monticello, thank you guys so much for this past hour talking houses. I hope I have absorbed some of it and I can recall it when the time comes for me to make that jump. We are not there yet, but the time will come eventually.
Good luck at your rental.
Yes, of course. Thank you guys so much. Again, support for Vox Pop comes from Asia Barong Gallery, Great Barrington Campus, including Pan Asian Sculpture Park, Furniture Exhibition, and Ethnographic Art Gallery, China, Japan, Korea, India, Southeast Asia, asiabarong.com, and Plaza Travel Center, presenting a small group trip from Albany to Finland's Northern Lights in February. Escort it. For trip details, Jean at plazatravel.net. Thanks so much for tuning in to Vox Pop again this afternoon. Our engineer has been Mike Bowen. Behind the board, as always, I'm Aaron Scheller-Levine in for Ray Graff today. Tomorrow, it's gardening. See you at 2 p.m. Stay tuned now for 51%.